The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday.
Live
in the Israel Update with Anthony Reich, only on Chai FM.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Booker Tov, good. How are you guys doing today, Howard and Howard?
Yeah, excellent, thank you. We were just actually hearing about some Israeli bands, that some Israeli groups that were here for the Ultra Festival, and how well they were received. Anthony, moving on to very, very serious and worrying news, is that incidents occurring on a few different fronts now have led to speculation about the possibility of a more prolonged conflict and a more open conflict with Hamas. Can you tell us what that story is about?
Well, there are quite a lot of things going on in different areas, and I think, you know, for me, what's very significant is that the Egyptian government has seen fit to send a delegation to Gaza to talk about the escalating situation with Israel. And when the Egyptians get involved, then you know that they're sensing that this is leading to a place which potentially could be problematic, not only for Israel and not only for Hamas, but obviously Egypt has an interest in this as well, given that these conflicts are taking place along the Egyptian border. But there have been a number of little things that are going on that are kind of leading to a situation where now people are looking towards the new chief of general staff, Aviv Kochavi, to say, what is Israel going to do about all of these things that are going on, little pockets of resistance, little pockets of incidents that are happening? The first, of course, is what's happening along the Gaza border itself. It's been almost a year now since the protests along the Gaza border were first initiated. And there was a view that, you know, over time they would eventually die out. But in fact, they've continued, albeit on slightly a lower flame than was the case previously. But nevertheless, the protests continue, and IDF soldiers are having to be stationed along that border area constantly now, with groups who are gathering there on an ongoing basis and who are trying to break through the fence and who are throwing explosive devices over the fence into Israeli territory and towards those soldiers. And this is definitely creating some sort of a thought which says, after a year of having to tolerate this, you know, we just don't want this to continue any longer. And it's presenting more of a threat, and it's becoming more sustained than I think was originally the idea. The original thought was that it probably wouldn't last this long. So that's the first thing that's been going on. The second thing that's happening is, of course, these explosive balloons that we spoke about yesterday. There were some further explosive balloons that were sent over the border towards Israel again since our discussion yesterday morning. And, you know, the issue is that up until now, fortunately, the explosives have exploded harmlessly. They haven't damaged any buildings. They haven't injured anybody. But that situation is likely not to continue. And the moment some incident happens where somebody is injured, God forbid, or there is damage to property, it's going to escalate the situation way beyond what it is at the moment. So every day a few explosive balloons, you know, nobody even, hardly anybody even recognizes it or notices it. But eventually there is going to be some sort of an upgrade to the situation if, God forbid, somebody is injured, and then the government is going to be held responsible for not taking care of it, you know, beforehand, before anybody is injured. And so these explosive balloons are also lending themselves to a situation where the IDF is saying, no more, we can't continue to tolerate this anymore. And in order to stop it, we're going to have to do something that's a little bit more serious, a little bit more sustained, and perhaps a little bit more violent in its nature in terms of trying to stop the situation. There is another issue that's been going on where Hamas has really been building up its strength within the West Bank, the Judea Samaria area, within the Palestinian Authority area. And that's been noticed by the Israeli security authorities and a lot of Hamas operatives in that area. And not only are they operating against Israel, but they're also operating against the Palestinian Authority and Fatah itself. So the Israeli security services are keeping a very careful watch to see what's going on there in terms of arms buildups, in terms of people getting hold of ammunition, in terms of people creating pockets of resistance, cells that might be operating against Israel. And that's becoming a real concern. And then there is this particular issue that's been happening along the Temple Mount, where tensions have been increased as a result of the fact that the Waqf, the Muslim council that's responsible for administering Muslim sites, Muslim holy sites in Jerusalem, including the Temple Mount area, they decided that they would reopen the Golden Gate, which is a gate that has been closed by Israel since 2003, and which the Israeli High Court ruled should not be reopened. And despite this fact, the Waqf decided that they would be reopening the gate, that they would effectively not recognize the authority of the Israeli court, not care about it. And there are increasing resistance and increasing battles that are going on around the area of the Golden Gate as a result of Israeli security services trying to implement the decision by the court and the decision by the Israeli security services not to allow that gate to be opened. And yet crowds are gathering there, and there is a lot of resistance around that area at the moment. So that could potentially be a flashpoint for something a little bit further. And so all of these considerations are now leading people to speculate, and particularly now we're seeing in the press as well, some speculation that there might well be a more open conflict with Gaza in order somehow to try to douse the flames of all of these little conflict areas that are going on.
It's quite incredible to look, because if you watch this progression 3 years ago, as we've said, this type of conflict didn't exist really. And slowly we've had the pressure on the border. Then we've had these balloons that were quite crude that were coming over. Now they're much a little bit more sophisticated and attached to explosive devices. They can do more damage. There's definitely been this is definitely, from my perspective, a developing style of warfare that hasn't yet played out. We don't know where this is going to end.
I think it's a developing style of warfare, and yet it's more of the same, because Hamas has been very intent upon trying to present itself as being the civilians, the weaker force against the might of the Israeli army, where the army have their uniforms and they have their weapons and they have their infrastructure and they have a very formal kind of presence. The Hamas method of operating is more informal. Civilians operating from private homes with small weapons, with balloons, with cheap weapons, nothing expensive, but all looking like it's kind of just being constructed on the hoof without any real plan, without any real infrastructure, without any real money, without any real formal process, without any, it doesn't have that standing, it doesn't look like an army of any sort. This is just,
and of course
kind
that makes
of,
Israel
so-called
look,
individuals.
And that of course makes Israel look a lot worse, because when you defend or when you try and eliminate this type of threat, you look like you're a bully. You're fighting
that's
balloons
exactly.
with missiles.
So I think there's two points to it. First of all, it's really frustrating for Israel to have to use expensive missiles in order to try to defend itself against the threat of a balloon, which costs, I don't know, 10 agorot or a shekel or whatever it is. The whole balloon and the explosive device and the whole thing put together probably costs a few shekels. And Israel is having to use weaponry which costs hundreds or maybe even thousands of shekels each time in order to defend itself against these very, very cheap but amazingly effective, even though they are not accurate. Because, I mean, once you're only paying a few shekels for a balloon, there's no problem putting 100 out in the hope that one will eventually hit its target. So that's not an issue. Whereas Israel's missiles and Israel's arms are very much focused and very, very accurate. And the reason for that is because they are quite expensive. And so you want them to be very effective without having to fire 100 missiles. You want to just fire one and hit your target and do what needs to be done. So I think that that's the first thing, that there's a little frustration about this imbalance between how much money is being thrown and how effective that money is in terms of what it's doing to protect Israel and what it's doing to attack Israel by Hamas. So I think that's the first thing. And I think the second thing is the PR campaign, which you pointed out, which makes Israel look like a bully, because it's using, these huge weapons with massive design process and massive amounts of money having been invested in order to try and shoot down little children's balloons, which, you know, happen to be floating over the border. It just kind of looks like it's unbalanced. And the PR makes Israel look like a bully. I mean, in your words,
absolutely.
I think that's exactly right.
Just, we don't have a lot of time, but I want to cover the story. 21 Israelis are on the latest Forbes billionaire list. Tell us about that.
Well, I think this is an amazing thing that there are 21 Israelis who have made this list. And Eyal Ofer, who is the son of one of the famous Ofer brothers, you know, Sammy and Yuli were the guys, the two brothers who built up this Ofer empire, one could call it. And Eyal is one of the sons, and he is apparently the top ranked Israeli on the Forbes a billionaire list this year. Apparently were only 18 on the list last year, but now there are 21, and that doesn't count people like Roman Abramovich, who actually has Israeli citizenship, but for the purposes of the Forbes list has been listed as Russian. And it also, it doesn't include other Israelis, including people like Patrick Drahi, who also has Israeli citizenship, but is listed as French for the purposes of the billionaires list. But so that means that Eyal Ofer is ranked number 149 on the list. Roman Abramovich, by the way, is ranked, I think, 107. And so if they recognized him as Israeli, he would be the top-ranked Israeli. So it's Ofer who is 149. Apparently, he has a fortune of about $9.5 billion. He's followed in second place by Steph Wertheimer and, of course, Shari Arison, who's the highest-ranked Israeli woman. She's ranked number 355 with a fortune of about $5 billion. So it shows that, you know, Israelis are really increasing in their wealth. Teddy Sagi is an interesting one. He is ranked 546th on the list with a fortune of about $3.8 billion. But he's a classic example of somebody who's come to the situation somewhat later, having developed a technology and having been able to sell his company, to list his company and sell it on the market. So he's one of the younger people on the list, as opposed to the Ofers, who you know, are what we would call in the business old money. Their parents effectively made the money through this empire, through shipping, through Israel Chemicals, and through other industries that they've been involved with. So all in all, I think it makes for interesting reading, and it shows that, you know, the Israeli economy is certainly growing in terms of its influence around the world, and that so many Israelis, I mean, I was surprised to see that there were 21 Israelis on that list, and growing. You know, last year I think there were only 18, now 21, and each year it seems to get more and more.
Unbelievable. And we don't really have a lot of time, but just, I've been meaning to cover this story and we haven't got to it. There was an announcement earlier this week that the Vatican has agreed to open its archives regarding the controversial wartime Pontiff Pius the 12th. Just give us an overview of this.
So Pius the 12th was the Pope during the Holocaust era. And there have been and continue to be a lot of accusations against him personally and, of course, against the Catholic Church about their behavior during the period of the Shoah. And the fact that it seems from some accounts that Pope Pius might have even had a fairly close relationship with the Nazi regime. So it's interesting that Pope Francis has now decided, and he announced earlier this week, that documents from the Vatican's secret archive regarding Pope Pius and his actions during the Shoah period will be open to scholars during March next year, 2020, in order to try to help shed light on this highly controversial period. And I think we're going to talk a little bit more about this. I mean, it'll be another year still until the archives goes open. And of course, Rabbi David Rosen, who's the International Director for Interreligious Affairs in the US, has obviously been very, very active in trying to make this happen, to try and to create some sort of dialogue with the Catholic Church, which stands accused of not only these secrets about behavior during the Shoah, but indeed many other anti-Jewish activities. So I think that this is something that we're definitely going to talk a lot more about in the coming months and in the next year until the archives goes open.
Absolutely fascinating. And I believe that we'll learn not only about the church's actions during that time, but I think we're going to be learning a lot more about other aspects of the Holocaust that we've always, that perhaps might have been missing from our knowledge base.